Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
So the theme is
nice.
Let's take a look. Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Cognitive Recalibration Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Shravan. We don't have Tarun here with us. I was about to do my normal intro just then. Tarun has not watched what we're recording or reviewing today.
Oh, he's not caught up yet.
So he's not caught up. So he usually joins anyway, even if he hasn't watched something. But he also had a bit of a sore throat and cough situation happening, so he didn't want to jump on the podcast with a scratchy throat. But we've got a very worthy replacement. In fact, probably a better replacement for Tarun for this.
I'm just the next best thing.
Bhaskar is back. He's joining us. Anything Star Wars related, we tend to get you back on. We did Book of Boba Fett.
I think Mandalorian Season 2 we did. And then we did
Obi-Wan.
Obi-Wan. Andor is pending.
I've started watching.
Nice. That's good.
But Mandalorian Season 3 is what we're going to be talking about today. And then we're going to probably spend the first half of the episode talking about our thoughts on the overall season. And then we can jump into all the stuff they announced at Star Wars Celebration and our thoughts on.
That was a wild ride. Yeah. So thanks for having me back. It's great to be back on. It's like first time we're doing video. First time I'm doing video. You guys did one last week for Guardians.
Yeah.
Guardians 3. So this is really interesting. It's very bright in here.
Yeah.
It's almost like we're in an imperial interrogation room, with the white lights meant to disorient us. But no, it's good. It's good to see. People can finally see all the nice artwork we have, which is great. Got some Mandalorian Grogu stuff over there.
Yeah, I don't know if you... I don't think they can... It's just out of...
Oh, it's just out of view.
Yeah, I'll put a shot in
later.
But we've got a My Neighbor Totoro depiction of the Mandalorian and Grogu.
Oh, nice.
Just up here.
Just missing a Rancor. Yeah.
That can be the cat bus, you know.
Oh, yeah. The cat bus. Nice. Yeah. That'll be fun. We should do that. Man, what a wild season of Disney Plus, a year of Disney Plus. It's been a bit interesting.
I think what they're doing is they're actually slowing down the number of things that they're producing now, or things that are coming out. Because I think last year there was just too much stuff. There was many Star Wars shows were there last year? There was Book of Boba Fett.
Bad Batch Season 1.
Yeah.
Season 2. This year's Bad Batch Season 2 coincided with Mandalorian Season 3.
Yeah.
But it's at the same time. But there was Bad Batch, there was Obi-Wan in the beginning of the year. And then there was Mandalorian. Oh, no, Mandalorian Season 2 was before, finished right around December.
Yes.
And then Book of Boba Fett came out last year.
Yeah.
Yeah, which was...
So we had quite a bit. And then obviously the Marvel stuff was also happening around the same time.
Yeah.
But what they've done now is I think they've just spaced out all the shows. Because what they did with Obi-Wan actually... it didn't affect Obi-Wan, but it did affect Ms. Marvel, which was running at the same time as Obi-Wan.
Right, yes.
And they used to, I think they both released episodes on the same day. So it was a Wednesday release, but both of them were releasing episodes on the same day. And as a result, Ms. Marvel isn't as popular as,
as
Obi-Wan. But
I still haven't caught up on Ms. Marvel because right after Ms. Marvel finished and right after Obi-Wan finished, I'm pretty sure it was Bad Batch.
Yeah.
And then it was just continuous on stuff to keep you occupied thereafter.
That's right.
It was very, very interesting. But the schedule release aside, this season has been quite hyped up. I remember a lot of people were looking at when the trailer dropped for season 3, we were all like, okay, this is where things are going to go down. This is like the culmination of multiple plot lines and storylines I've been developing for 2 years straight. Who's going to come back? Who's going to... what themes, who's going to die, and all that kind of stuff. What characters might we see from the animated shows? There was a lot of speculation. And yeah, it's really weird to be on the other side of it now, kind of thinking about, well, what are the bigger plot points now that we're going to see on the big screen?
Yeah.
Which Dave Filoni is now confirmed to be directing a Mandalorian.
The combination.
Fett, combination of all the stuff that he's done. Even Rebels. Like, it looks like there's going to be like a Rebels, Mandalorian, Boba Fett. It might be all these things just wrapped into together. One big Ahsoka. Yeah. It's very, very interesting. Yeah.
Yes. So, well, jumping on to our thoughts on season three. So, before we talk about season three, I think we need to mention Book of Boba Fett, because that was essentially season 2.5.
Yep.
And a lot of people maybe missed that. And
a lot of people did.
Yeah.
There's so many people who are reacting on YouTube and people who we know just personally, like going, okay, but when did he get a Naboo Starfighter? Why is Grogu back? I thought Grogu went with Luke. And what the hell? Why is he back on Navarro? And people are like, oh, yeah, you need to go back and watch episode 5 onwards from Book of Boba Fett. Just go and watch that.
Yeah.
It's like season 2.5. You won't even need to know what happened beforehand.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of stuff that happens in Book of Boba Fett, which I think it was a bit of an interesting take on the viewer's side, but we're just starting to find out now on the creative side. It was a bit of controversy as well going around the decision to include so much of the Mandalorian story
in Book of Boba Fett.
And I think it was unfortunately a decision to try and pull viewers in, which they didn't need to do. And, you know, I think
they could have concentrated that show on, we've done a full review of Book of Boba Fett, so you can go and listen to that.
Oh yeah. But that was like a 2.5 hour long.
Yeah.
Yeah. Please go watch that.
Worth it. Yeah. In that we basically mentioned, like, they probably should have focused more of the season on the title character Boba Fett rather than transitioning into a Mandalorian 2.5 type situation. And then I think it made Mandalorian season 2 slightly worse, because everything they set up at the end of that season where he goes and Grogu goes away with Luke.
Yeah.
And you have that very heartfelt farewell, essentially, that Din Djarin has with Grogu. It's immediately reversed.
Yeah.
In another show, not even in Mandalorian.
Yeah.
In a separate show, spin-off show. Yeah. So I think that probably didn't go down too well with fans, I'm guessing. Well,
it's not only not reversed, like I think we can talk about spoilers in Book of Boba Fett now, because it's quite old. Luke Skywalker comes in deep fake form, where it's extremely well done, where it basically
is much better in Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah. Post Return of the Jedi, Luke Skywalker is shown training Grogu, and he's like in his new Jedi Academy school, which is like the dream of every OG Star Wars fan to see Luke in his prime. And they did this in a show as an aside, but it was very, very important. And I think coming into season three, you don't have any more. All right, there's no more. The positives, I think, is there's no more angst of separation. Like, you know, Din and Grogu are meant to be together. Okay, they're together. If they wanted to train Grogu up as a Jedi, they would have shown immediately that Grogu was not as attached, you know, or that there wasn't that much tension between the two, because he, you know, Grogu and Din obviously have a lot of connection. They have a lot of familial love for each other, and we saw a lot of, I think we saw a lot of Din without Grogu after taking care of him, like especially when Grogu got kidnapped, when Grogu got forcibly removed, and that you see Din in his moments, and it's like kind of really jarring and sad. It's isolating, and I feel like from a viewership angle, many people might not want to see that. I can think of a lot of people who'd be like, all right, the baby's gone, I don't want to watch anymore.
Yeah.
Whereas when the baby's there and they're both together, it's like, oh, okay, this is cool. They're back together. Everyone is interested. Not just the hardcore fan, not just like the casual fans, but both of them together are looking at it going, all right, we're all in this. Let's see where they can go. And I feel like the executives realize this real quick. Like they planned to pull in a certain crowd with Grogu. They had no idea it was going to be so viral, so popular, that these two together would be like father and son, you know, like adopted father and son, that kind of thing. And I think that's the reason why the executive team thought, we got to bring them back.
Yeah.
And maybe that's where Jon Favreau had a bit of a disagreement.
Yeah.
With how that was done, or if it should be done at all.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I think, that's the question, if it should have been done at all, or when it was done, in which show it was done in.
Yeah.
So I think it would have been better placed if they did it maybe in this this season of Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And maybe spent a couple of episodes sort of building that up rather than doing it in a spin-off show and they're just back together at the start of the season. But you mentioned something around the popularity of the combination of the two characters and how it was bringing in so many viewers. Yeah. Interestingly, this is – the viewership hasn't been great for this season. Right. It's been quite low even compared to Andor was also quite low, but compared to like Obi-Wan, it's certainly low and certainly lower than the first two seasons.
Right, right. So lower than expected even by
– Much lower. Wow. Yeah.
Okay, that's interesting.
And I don't know what has caused this. Like maybe the hardcore Star Wars fans are tuning in, but it's just completely lost the general audience. Maybe because of Book of Boba Fett, or maybe just people are generally starting to lose a bit of interest in Star Wars in general.
And I would say it's also following a predictive formula where successive seasons get lower and lower viewerships.
Yeah, like, but the thing is, season two, the finale for season two is one of the most watched episodes.
Yeah.
It could be the most watched episode on Disney Plus.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was huge. I remember when it came out, it was massive. People were losing their shit.
And every week there'd be like conversations about what's going to happen next. Like there was a lot more conversation on social media.
Actually, well. You're right. I so when episodes came out for this, I was honestly speaking, I was actually not watching episodes as they came out.
Yeah.
I due to, you know, personal like work and stuff. Like normally in previous season two, when an episode came out, I would drop shit to watch the episode because I'm like, I need to know what happens. There's too much at stake.
Yeah.
You know, what season two was that crazy. Like, yeah, like Grogu getting kidnapped by dark troopers and Boba Fett coming back. And I'm like, oh, I need to see this. Yeah. This is the first time in like 20 years or 30 years that we're seeing characters.
Yeah.
So season two was massive. And I was like, yeah, if an episode dropped, I would literally just stop work, come home, watch it.
Moment it comes out, because in Australia, I think the episodes dropped at like 6 p.m. our time.
Yeah, yeah, pretty decent timings as well. Like, a bit actually earlier. Season two is usually they would drop it at like 3 p.m. sometimes, yeah, 2 p.m.
Yeah,
in time for like the late night viewers in America, they could all kind of sink in as well. But for season three, I'll be perfectly honest. It's like an episode came out. I'm like, okay, you know, it's Din and Grogu together. They're exploring some stuff. I can watch this maybe tomorrow.
Yeah,
there's nothing going to be.
There wasn't a sense of urgency, and I think
a sense of urgency.
There just wasn't that. It felt very safe. Like, usually, safety is like a positive thing, but not when it comes to movies and TV shows in this sense, because it feels like nothing's going to happen to these characters in this season. Like it feels like they'll be fine. Like they'll get out of whatever situation they're in.
Right.
It didn't feel like they were in serious danger at any point in time.
Yep. Yep. Because like let's go back to the actual plot points. All right, so the last thing that was happening when Grogu and Din came together was all the stuff on Mos Espa, right? It was a pretty local fight between the different clans, and Boba Fett became the head honcho. All that resolved. That's great. Din and Grogu get on the N1 Starfighter and they fly out back to their regular life. So they're not necessarily chasing anything. We know that Din Djarin was excommunicated. It was excommunicado from the Mandalorian tribe by the armorer because he admitted he took his helmet off.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's a bit of an angsty kind of that's a hook to say, oh, is he going to redeem himself?
Yeah.
Another thing is there going to be any fallout from Grogu's incomplete training?
Which is that. Sorry to interrupt, but that particular plot point was also in Book of Boba Fett in terms of like him.
He uses his force powers, right, to actually help the situation.
Yeah.
He was the Deus Ex Machina of the Book of Boba Fett.
Yeah.
And by the way, I think Jon Favreau mentioned that when Grogu was with Luke training, he was there for like something around 2 years. Yeah. That's what he said. And I'm like, I did not think it was 2 years. It felt like a couple of months, maybe 6 months at max or a year, but 2 years is a long time.
Yeah. And it didn't feel like he'd learned that much. To be honest, like because he was already doing some force stuff before he met Luke.
It was like uncontrolled, and he was getting tired and fatigued. Now he's using it, and
it's still a bit more.
He can stand up and
And in this season, he does do some stuff, but I think this season is a bit light on Grogu.
Yeah,
so he's not in it as much.
Yeah, which I think is a positive decision.
Yeah,
like in the emotional moments that have Grogu are great. You know, there's some nice moments in the cockpit and that kind of stuff. But the focus of season three is the Mandalorians.
Yeah.
And well, I dare say not even Din. The focus is on other Mandalorians. It's on the the main culprit.
I would say the focus is on the Mandalorian, is, I guess, a loose term. It could be any Mandalorian, but
yes,
in this case, it's probably Bo-Katan is the primary focus of this season rather than Din. Din's almost a secondary character in some, like, definitely towards the second half of the season. Bo-Katan is more of the focus.
Yeah, absolutely. They actually did take liberty to almost give ownership of season three to not just Din in this case. I don't know, in one episode it was Paz Vizsla. You know, in one episode it was Bo-Katan, in one episode it's like different Mandalorians, which I think is a very cool thing to do, to be able to abstract away from the typical protagonist storyline. And instead of showing everything from Din's point of view, now it's taken in terms of Bo-Katan's point of view, which might not be that resonant for people who haven't followed Bo's journey from like the animated series or like Clone Wars and Rebels, but have seen her since Mandalorian season two and thought, oh, who's this uppity, really kind of cocky person? And like you get that feeling, yes. But yeah, season three is much more about redemption and about taking back what is yours.
Yeah.
Than I would have hoped. We get to see some really cool scenes, to be honest, about like set in Mandalore, set back in the homeworld. And we obviously get to encounter some nice enemies, some nice, interesting enemies, actually, like people from all walks of the spectrum in terms of whether they're Imperial or ex-Imperial or just monsters straight up, like from the depths of Mandalore. So, yeah, most of the series takes place on the planet Mandalore, or in the Mandalore system, which is, I'll be honest, I was looking forward to this for a long time. I had no idea how they were going to pull it off, because we don't actually spend that much time on Mandalore at all in the first two seasons. We just hear it. We see flashbacks.
Yeah.
In Book of Boba Fett, you see the flashback of the basically the genocide and the wiping out of all the cities of Mandalore by the Empire. But this is the first time we were actually going there, which is interesting stuff. That's, it was a long time coming. And I think I feel like they did that whole arc justice. They definitely brought as much as they could from, like you see Mandalore in great detail in Clone Wars, by the way. You see them going right into the city.
Oh, really? Okay.
Capital city of Mandalore. They go to Sundari. They literally just sit around talking to the Duchess, Obi-Wan. So Obi-Wan falls in love with the Duchess of Mandalore. Is implied that they had a previous kind of relationship. And if anyone, Obi-Wan would have left the order for this particular person. So, and that's Bo-Katan's sister, Satine. And it's like, they're literally episodes where they're walking through the city and there's cars flying by and there's politics of Mandalore, which is why I'm like, guys, go and watch season three of Clone Wars. There's like full episodes of like, oh, this person's trying to overthrow this person. Let's go to this other city in Mandalore and get allies and that kind of stuff, where it's like, you see it in great detail and then you just hear that it's been destroyed. So it's like, wow, why are they going to show it again? And they do show it again.
Yeah.
In a very interesting way. So it's like, it's cool to see that.
Yeah, I think one of the positives of this season, and it's a positive for this series in general, is the visuals. I think compared to the other Disney Plus shows, this is dealt with better in terms of the visuals. Like, it feels like there's an episode in Coruscant as well, and that was different in terms of the visual, the way they picturized it visually compared to like normal Star Wars stuff.
Yes, you're right.
Yeah.
Oh yeah, well, that was with the ex with the ex Imperials, right?
Yeah.
Yes, we do see Coruscant again, which is
This one episode that literally like none of the Mandalorians are in. It's just another part of this universe that's, you know, two other characters that we just get introduced to.
Dr. Pershing.
Yeah, who we know from season one.
Season one.
Yeah.
And another ex-Imperial we see working, who used to work for Moff Gideon in the end of season two.
Yeah.
Towards the end of season two. And yeah, it's just this kind of really weird pseudo-political.
Yeah.
Like
a lot of people are saying it like that. It's a kind of episode that maybe fit better into like something like an Andor.
Yes.
It had
massive Andor vibes because it was like, you know, in the grimy city, you see like what happened to political prisoners and how they were turned around. And they did it really well. You know, it gives a different feeling for the whole show. It's like, again, the this is the only show that we're watching now that's set after the events of the original trilogy. So in a way, but before the sequel trilogy. So in a way, it's like for people who kind of discount the sequel trilogy or they don't want to spend too much time there, this show is like the frontier of new storytelling because there's 60 years between, oh, not 60 years, I think was that 50 years or something between the events of Return of the Jedi and
Force Awakens.
There's a lot of time.
Yeah.
So in that time, there's just this frontier of storytelling that people can take place. Like, oh, what happens to the post-Empire world? What happens, like how does the Republic take over? How competent are they? And you kind of see the beginnings, the seeds of like overconfidence of a government or the seeds of incompetence of like not necessarily what makes something like an empire, but what makes a political force that defeats the empire, what could destroy them? You know, like what are the seeds of, you know, maybe they're too trusting. They just bring in ex-imperials and imagine they're all going to work for the good of the universe or the good of the galaxy.
Yeah.
Not always the case. These people are still scheming. There's still a lot of ex-imperials who have the old mindset.
Yeah.
So it's like...
And there's even one segment. We're probably talking spoilers for this. So like if you haven't watched... If you haven't watched season 3 of Mandalorian, we're going to do spoilers. But there's a in that episode, there's a part where they're using some Imperial technology towards the end of the episode.
Oh yes,
I think they're like, "Well, this is we're not the Imperials. We're not going to like torture you."
Yeah,
but it's on a very light setting to like essentially wipe your memory, or like, is that what that machine does?
Well, it was like an electroencephalograph thing to just calm people down,
yeah,
or to reduce traumatic memories. But if you used in the max setting, it will absolutely fry your brain.
Yeah,
and yeah, and it was just so nonchalant. It's like, who do you think we are, the Empire, son? Come on, those days are over. We're not like that. Get it over. We're completely clean. We're all good. Yeah. And it's like, that's how totalitarian regimes start, by saying, oh, we're not as bad as the previous guys. We're just, you know, we're trying to keep the peace here and we're doing it easy. So it's like, you got to be careful. Like people who sympathize, there are many people who love the Empire, like fans. Just dress in like in Empire clothing or cosplay as that, but they're actually like, you know what? The rebellion's worse than the Empire. People actually think about this. And I'm kind of seeing like that side where it's like, okay, the rebellion is a bit like this ragtag bunch of political leaders and different regimes. But when you think about it, they don't have to be the exact same, but they can be as fallible in their aims to think, oh, total harmony is achievable. Everyone just needs to get along and do the right thing. That's not always the case. That's very idealistic. And it's like, yeah, I can see people who criticize the image of the rebellion or the New Republic, as it's called.
Mm.
Right. And you kind of see hints of this in Mandalorian season 1 and 2 when you have like X-Wing fighters at a police basically being a bit overhanded with like the way they interrogate suspicious ships and that kind of stuff, like really overhanded. You know, like saying, you know, give us your ID. And it's like, you know, I don't think I have a code. And it's like they just pull back and get ready to attack.
Yeah.
And it brings you back to like, oh, wow, okay, this is like crazy trigger-happy cops.
Yeah, because so, it's not that long after Return of the Jedi, right?
No, it's like 5 years.
Yeah, so there'll still be, you know, some remnants of that. Yeah. Of the Imperials.
Oh, definitely. Yeah. Like not everyone died after the explosion of the second Death Star. The Empire spanned a whole galaxy, right? So there's going to be people who are still alive.
Yeah.
So it's great to see how the show evolves. It doesn't just focus on one thing. They're showing many different things. And there's that episode in Coruscant. There's an episode before Din and Grogu go back to like Mandalore. They actually catch up with the Mandalorian group.
Yes.
The Culvert, right?
Yeah, yeah.
The Culvert. And they kind of just get back together and they kind of talk about what's the next move, where to go. Because this Culvert's just hopping between planets. And they found a new one, which is like this random desert. Not desert planet, but it's like a canyon planet.
Is that the one with the dragon?
Yeah, it's filled with all kinds of beasts and amphibious predators and flying predators. And it's not safe for the kids. But they're there. So the conversation is like, well, are we just going to keep hopping and hopping and hopping? Or are we going to take back our birthright and go back home? So like the first few episodes of season three is essentially just Din getting back to the covert, but the covert's having all kinds of issues with the wildlife there, and it's kidnapping, you know, it's kidnapping foundlings, and people are dying by fighting giant snapping tortoise dragons and that kind of stuff. So they're like, oh, well, we were surviving and they like battle, but is this really a sustainable lifestyle? So it's an interesting scene on how that is. And then you obviously see Din going by Bo-Katan's castle on one of the moons of Mandalore and just saying, hey, Bo, what's up? And she like couldn't be more bored. She's just like, and the last thing we see of season two is
she's lost the Darksaber.
She's lost, well, the Darksaber was
was
with Din, and she didn't accept it when Din offered it to her.
Yeah.
And the last thing we see is, well, they take over the Imperial Cruiser in season two.
Yeah.
They have a lot of assets, and Bo's got her kind of Rangers who follow her, the Mandalorian Rangers. And so beginning of season three, we see Bo's basically lost the support of her followers because they don't obviously respect her leadership anymore. Lost the Imperial Cruiser, the crew with Axe Wolves, and like the people who used to follow her, they're not following her anymore. She's just in her castle by herself. Like, doesn't give a shit. Lost all motivation for life.
I remember in season two, she was like, she had her own like team, right?
Yeah.
And in the finale, it was her and there was another.
Yeah, Reva. I think it was Reva or there was another Mandalorian who was a Night Owl.
Yeah.
Yeah.
With her.
Koska Reeves. She was there.
Yeah. So was she with the.
She was with Axe Wolves. The guy. So they were both with the Imperial Cruiser on that planet in the Mandalorian system that Din and Bo-Katan went to get, but they had all this other side quest stuff they were doing.
Was this the group of guys who were there was this like little side plot where they were like kidnapping someone? I'm trying to remember.
Yeah. They weren't the same Mandalorians who I think they were the ones who were guns for hire. They were just doing once they left Bo-Katan, they were doing their own little bounty hunting and stuff.
Yeah.
But in season two, they were basically right beside her.
Yeah.
They were essentially just next to her. And there's that scene in the cantina where Boba Fett comes in and accosts Bo-Katan. And she's like, you're not a Mandalorian. You're a clone. I could recognize that accent anywhere. And it's like, careful, princess. And then he gets into a tussle with Koska Reeves.
Yes, I remember that. Yes.
So, Koska and Axe Wolves are now basically heading up this Imperial this corvette or this kind of cruiser. That's not a full Star Destroyer, but it's like it's a pretty big Imperial hull.
Because there's a subplot with like a husband and wife or something, right?
In season two?
No, in this season where they're you get introduced to them and they're keeping the wife hostage and there's a husband or something. And there's some alien species. Yeah. I can't remember. It was like a very small five.
The Aquilian lovers. The Aquilian, the prince and the princess.
Yeah.
That was a small, like, that was the beginning of these guys. So they're basically bounty hunting and they're doing the work of like these other kingdoms trying to keep away these two lovers or so.
Yeah.
To bring them back, bring the prince back essentially.
Yeah.
So they were doing that this season. They're getting up to their own stuff. But like, one of the themes around this whole season is reuniting the splintered Mandalorians, because there's Mandalorians like we're talking about Axe Wolves and Reva doing their own shit. Bo-Katan's in her castle doing nothing. Din's basically just doing random stuff. He spent some time on Navarro and he does like martial work for Greef Karga.
Yeah.
And I think episode one or episode two, I forgot which one it is, where
I think it's like episode one where he, because episode one he goes there and then.
There's these pirates who attack. Who attack the planet that Greef Karga's on, right? Yeah. And it's like, well, this planet's helped Mando a lot, right? Helped Din a lot. So Din's feel obligated to protect it. And he basically acts as a, you know, de facto marshal to protect the place. And he does a good job. But yeah, this threat is what keeps him here for a while. There's a cool scene where he tries to bring back IG-11. He finds IG-11. I actually loved that scene where because I really wanted IG-11 to come back. If you go watch season one again, like he's one of the best sharpshooters in the whole universe. Yeah. Just the way he takes out like an entire gang of like of ruffians is insane. It's really cool to see. So he's like an assassin droid. So he tries to bring him back and it doesn't work out well.
So he goes back to his previous programming, which was to
assassinate Grogu. Which is hilarious. It's like his little half-bodied like debris of a droid just like crawling like a horror movie and it tries to kill it. Yeah, I've got to say the puppet work in Mandalorian season 3 was really good. You know, the puppet work for Grogu and the way that Grogu interacts with what's that name of the small
he's also in is it Rise of Skywalker?
Yeah. Rise of Skywalker. He's in Rise of Skywalker, like the small fixer species who are like just in their workshop and fixing away.
Yeah.
Yeah. The scene where Grogu tries to hug one of them.
they just get away from me.
It's hilarious. Yeah. I love that.
But then they reconstruct the droid so that Grogu can like sit in it and
that's later on, like halfway through the season.
Yeah.
So Grogu actually has a bit of a vehicle he can move around in, and that's become viral now everywhere. Like
it's got a yes and no button.
It's got a yes and no button. So that was an interesting way they made like, okay, we all thought Grogu was going to talk this season or speak somehow.
Yeah.
And you can't just make him start talking like Yoda. Like
out of nowhere,
you know, stay silent, I can't anymore. Like you can't.
But even at the end of the season where I think he's getting inducted into being a Mandalorian.
Yeah.
And they're like, oh, we can't do it because he can't talk.
Right.
And then Din Djarin does it on his behalf.
Like, yeah. I think that's a good decision to make him talk. Now we're in like spoiler territory, so we're going straight in there.
Yeah.
Like the fact that, they actually asked him if he can talk and Din's like, he can't talk. It would be really corny to make
At that point. Because you never heard him talk.
And I feel it would have been a bit forced. So the fact that they found a way to make him talk without talking with this like, yes and no was hilarious.
Yeah.
Because like when he's in that thing and he can move around in a vehicle like it's a big crane, he's just like going, yes, yes, yes. He loves it so much.
And it also shows that he completely understands pretty much everything that people are saying and what's going on. He doesn't know how to talk. That's
pretty much. Yeah. Pretty much. Like he's 50 years old, 50 years plus. He's essentially an infant in his own right, but he's lived 50 years. So the time is not moving slow for him. He's still experiencing that, all that stuff. So that's really cool to see. They made a lot of interesting decisions with like the way the characters progress and move around. We can talk a bit about like Bo-Katan.
Yeah.
And her kind of struggle. So like I said, she's got nothing to do at the beginning of the season. She's just sitting alone and
she just gets roped into the adventure because of Din Djarin, actually, because he asks Grogu to go get her when he goes to Mandalore because he gets captured.
Why does he go there in the first place before he asks Grogu to go and get help? Remember why he goes there in the first place? Is it to ask about Mandalore?
Yeah, I think, it is to ask about Mandalore. And then I think she just says, oh, it's nothing there.
Oh, it's poison. Yeah, there's nothing there. And Din's like, I heard that it could just be like a myth that it's poisoned to prevent people from going back.
Yeah, and he has no other choice. Like, he has to go there.
Yeah,
he has to
because the armorer says you have to bathe in the waters of the mines, otherwise you can't redeem yourself. And he really wants to redeem himself.
Yeah.
So he goes to Bo and I think he asks her, like, what's the deal? Is it really dangerous or can I go? And Bo's like, knock yourself out.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I'm not going to try. I don't have the Darksaber. You want to go back to Mandalore and lead people, go for it. She's like, literally, just go do it. She's lost all like motivation to do anything. And then, Din goes and there's that really cool episode where he actually goes into, flies into Mandalore, flying around and he sees like, you know, Sundari, the destroyed city.
Yeah.
And those visuals there are amazing, by the way. Like he just.
And there's also, I think before he goes there, he acquires another droid because he needs a droid to help him.
Oh, yeah. He goes back to Tatooine for a bit, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Goes back to Tatooine, and then he sees the mechanic, he sees the person he's been going to get his who built his N1 starfighter, right? He gets R5, which is the same droid from Return of the Jedi. Same droid from the first Star Wars, New Hope.
Yes.
So when Luke is looking at the line,
it's R2-D2.
R2-D2 and there's R5, and then R5 comes around and he goes like he blows a casket. Uncle Owen, this droid's got a bad motivator. He's like, what are you trying to sell me, scrap? And so R5 actually is still there and he's fixed up and he comes in. So this is why Din wanted IG-11, like a droid to be able to survey the surface of Mandalore without getting damaged. So he has R5 now, that's fine. So there's like a really cool sequence of him exploring like a chasm within Mandalore and it's completely destroyed. The surface is glassed over.
Yeah.
From orbital like bombardment or whatnot.
And there was this interesting video essay. This is a bit of a deviation, but there was this interesting video essay that I saw regarding Star Wars and the way they treat droids now,
right?
Especially after Disney acquired them,
right?
So in the original Star Wars, droids were just like robots, like they're something that you own, but yeah, they're not, you don't have any feelings towards them.
Yeah,
they're
no,
just
no.
machines.
Like they're sold and bought. They're not allowed in bars.
Yeah.
So it was like a kind of allegory for a subhuman kind of slave.
Yeah.
Right. Although, yeah, the original Star Wars treated the droids with a bit more compassion, I think. Like they showed them in that light, but then they showed how cute and human-like they can be. So R2 was the kid.
Yeah.
And C-3PO was like the annoying, uncle figure or something like that.
Yeah.
So they kind of endeared droids for the first time, but they did show them as subhuman.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas in the more recent Star Wars material, like BB-8, for example, is essentially like a pet.
Oh, yeah. Like, he's a bud.
Like
yeah.
a dog. Well, like there's even a part where Oscar Isaac, when he reunites with BB-8.
Yeah.
And he's like patting him and like doing, like patting him like he's a dog.
Yeah, like, yeah. Like so, I can feel it. Yeah. Well, come on. You can't sell merch if you don't treat it like a pet, right?
Yeah. So it's just an interesting thing that I think Disney have done since they've acquired the Star Wars franchise. That
there's a lot more love. You can even see it in like the conventions and stuff or like the Star Wars Celebration. They actually build live versions of these droids and bring them out on the stage with them.
Yeah.
Like to show that they're practical things and they're just as important as any of the other actors and that kind of stuff. So it's really cool to see they treat them differently.
Yeah. And they definitely have like character. They're not just like some robots that
right.
Yeah,
they have like an actual persona. And I remember behind the scenes for the very first Star Wars, they had R2's voice was completely synthesized at a point. Like it was just keyboard beeps and boops. And then George Lucas said he wanted to make it feel more like relatable.
Yeah.
So they actually got the sound engineers to record their own voices making weird noises. So like the, you know, the whistles and the vocalizations that people can say, oh, that's organic. That's coming from a person or a creature. That's not like a beep or a boop.
And there's actually like some emotion because the beeps change depending on how he's feeling.
Yeah. Like when he's sad or when he's like screaming, wow. Like,
yeah.
You actually feel like, oh, this thing is like feeling shit, man. Like it's not just a hard drive.
Yeah.
So it's like that's a really interesting, that's a George Lucas decision. And they I think Dave Filoni and the team who worked really close with George are bringing that vision into like its fullest realization.
Yeah.
Of like, all right, treating droids like there's some like IG-11 was treated like an assassin. R5 is treated like a veteran surveyor or an astromech droid that is like, you know, experienced in seeing the different kind of things.
And there's even a section where like I think he's scared to like actually go out.
Yeah.
And like in the season finale, actually, he has to do some very important things.
Right.
And there's a part where he's like getting chased by smaller droids and he's like, and you can tell like by the sounds that he's almost fearful at one stage. And there's a part where he has to fly down and
do some stuff. He's asked to do a lot, actually, because you know, this is any astromech droid, you're like thinking, oh, they're made to repair ships. This one's asked to survey a hostile planet that we don't know what's it down there. He's asked to go down a chasm and just radar it, survey it, and come back. He does it. He comes back and he says, oh, yeah, it's, you know, he just gives the data. And so these guys go down and Din and Grogu go down and they basically just survey the whole place. And it's really eerie. It's kind of scary. And, well, Din kind of basically gets caught by this hunter. We don't know what it is. It's like this weird hybrid droid organic life form that basically hunts Mandalorians. We see he gets trapped, he gets hunted, injected and all that kind of stuff. And he just screams to Grogu, like, get Bo. And for Grogu's credit, he does a lot of good sneaking around to get up to get back up to Din. And Grogu gets back in his little pod, flies back up, pilots the ship. He basically puts it on auto command.
Yeah.
Directs it back to Bo's planet. He does a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
And it successfully gets Bo's attention and tells him like, oh, you know.
Well, I think the fact that he came there without Din Djarin was enough of a indication that something has gone wrong.
Right. So. And then we start to see that Bo notices something's wrong.
Yeah.
When Grogu's kind of semi-crying And it's like, what the hell happened? And then so, yeah. And then we get some nice Bo and Grogu relationship building.
Which we didn't really get in season two. I don't think they really
There was no bonding. It was just moments of like, you know, noticing the baby he's there. But it's the first time that Bo-Katan is like kind of forced to drop down her kind of really hard exterior of being that gruesome thing. Well, you know, it's also... right before this all happens, she goes down, helps free Din by going back down to the base of Mandalore through that chasm where the entrance of the mines, finds Bo, retrieves the Darksaber from Din, which Din dropped, and uses the Darksaber to kill this organism, this hunter, which is like this crazy, it's got like an electro staff as well. Actually, it's not just an electro staff. It's an electro staff that has a lightning that is attracted towards Beskar, and it's a reference to Rebels because there's a weapon in Rebels that disintegrates Beskar, basically just destroys Mandalorians en masse. And I think they use some of this technology to kind of show, okay, this is like a threat towards Mandalorians.
Yeah,
remind me a lot of General Grievous, like the weird organism that it was, and I don't think they disclose what that thing was. You just have to see it. It can dock into another massive turtle-like shell and fight with the hardware that it's in. And Bo basically tears it to pieces. She doesn't have a problem with the Darksaber at all. She wields it like a pro. And she was a previous owner of the Darksaber before Din got it, right? So it's like an old friend. She knows how to wield it. It's there. Puts it back. Frees Din. Gets him... rehabilitated.
In the process, do they both bathe in the waters? Or in the process, they end up bathing in the waters because he falls in, doesn't he?
Yeah. This is after she rehabilitates him, then she basically takes him to the waters.
Yeah. And then when he goes in, does he get attacked or something?
Well, he basically goes in like once he's back to his full health, he goes in, he starts walking into the mines, submerges himself, and then you kind of see him like he's pulled.
Yes. Yeah.
Almost like something's pulling him and it's not right. Bo immediately just reacts and jumps straight into the water to rescue him. And he's not just 10 or 15 meters down. He's like 50, 100 meters deep. Yeah. And you can't get that deep by just falling. I think he was pulled by something. So he goes there and he's all the way, he's at the very bottom. Bo basically just dives in with the rockets and it's a really cool scene. She grabs him and then resurfaces. And on the way up, like, she sees something stirring and it's a fucking mythosaur. Like, that's the last thing anyone expected. It's a mythosaur that's just been sleeping in the depths of these waters. And up until that point, it was just like this myth. Even the episode begins with Bo saying, it's a children's tale or something. It's a fable just told to keep kids, you know, engaged.
Yeah.
Now, she doesn't believe in any of this stuff. She doesn't believe in the way. She doesn't believe in the path of, you know, the watch of keeping your helmets on and that kind of stuff. She doesn't believe in any of that shit. She sees this and she has like an almost religious experience. Like, she doesn't know what the hell just happened. Gets up out of the water and then the episode cuts. And that was a really cool moment for both of them because it's like, well, they've kind of been, it's almost like a baptism, which is weird, but it's like a right through water and they both come out of it. And inadvertently, Bo gets bathed in the living waters. So she's technically herself redeemed, whatever, in the eyes of the others. Yep. She's perfect the way she is in her own eyes, I think. But what happens afterwards is really interesting. She actually doesn't remove her helmet out of respect for the covert and the armorer and everyone. She kind of just is like, let's see where this goes. I'm going to keep the helmet on and I'm going to follow the way. And the moment they get back to the covert and Din's like, I bathed, she rescued me. And the armorer's like, so you bathed as well. And everyone's looking at Bo like she's the outsider. And then the armorer's like, no, she bathed. So have you removed your helmet since you bathed? She's like, no. Well, then you're one of us.
Yeah.
And everyone just love bombs her. Just like, all right, you're one of us. They put a hand on her shoulder.
It's immediate,
like,
yeah.
It's this immediate thing. And you can tell how like starved for like affection or belonging Bo has been. Like, she's just been so starved. Now she's like back with her people. That they're saying that she's one of them. She belongs. She's like, wow, I've lost everyone that used to follow me. Now I'm back. Maybe this is the way for her to get.
This is the way.
This is the way. Yeah, maybe this is the way.
Yeah.
She actually now she understands the meaning of that. She's like, okay, I'm going to keep my helmet on. I'm going to help these people and I'm going to try and lead them. And that's where the story takes on Bo's kind of
journey. I think that's where it switches to a Bo-Katan-led season rather than Din Djarin season from that point onwards.
Which is really cool because you don't expect it, right? It's like, wow. And they don't completely refocus. It's just small scenes here and there where they show what's happening through Bo's lens.
So I guess we've been talking about this for almost an hour, so we could probably start wrapping it up and talk about sort of next stuff coming up in Star Wars. But a couple of criticisms that people have had for this season. Firstly, people really hate that episode with Jack Black and, and Lizzo.
Oh, Jack Black. Jack Black and Lizzo. That was an interesting cameo. It was a bit of a filler, to be honest.
Yeah. So there was filler episodes. People don't like the Coruscant one. I personally thought it was something different. Maybe it didn't fit in this series.
Yeah.
Like it could have been part of something else, but I thought within itself it was a good episode.
Yep, yep.
A couple of things that people say in terms of just payoffs. So Paz Vizsla, who has a bit of an arc in this season.
Such a cool arc, yeah.
But he just kind of dies and there's no word of... Like, not, they don't, people don't even mention it after he dies. Like, he dies, he sacrifices himself.
With the heavy repeater gun, and he basically saves the entire movement. He sacrifices himself, takes out like 6 or 7super commandos, those Imperial Beskar troopers, which is really hard. They need like multiple shots to like the weak point of their armor to get them done. Yeah, he sacrifices himself and, well, he makes up with Din because Din helps save his son, Ragnar, right?
Yeah.
So that's a cool little moment. Bo is responsible for that rescue as well. So everything's good. He's great. Right, and then Paz starts supporting them now. Every time Bo and Din get up and say, let's do this, Paz is the first one up, which wasn't the case beforehand. You know, Paz literally fought Din for the Darksaber in the little mini season. So his death is... Yeah, it was sad. Every time someone dies by like self-sacrifice in that way, it happens so many times in Clone Wars where like people die in a show of glory. This is one of the best deaths ever because he's a warrior, right? That's a glorious death. Like if this was a Viking, he would be like, he'd be dining in Valhalla right after this because he died saving his people in a show of glory and he took out like 7-1. He took them out and he fought the... like the Praetorian Guard, which is like the first time we see these guys now, the first time we saw them was in Last Jedi with the weapons they had.
Yes.
But this is the first time that we see them now in the chronological order. Like these are weird weapons trained, Beskar armored, you know, Sith-like acolytes that are trained in these weapons that basically almost have the same potency as a lightsaber. They can breach Beskar armor really easily. And yeah, he dies from...
Yeah. Well, another point that was brought up was so Rey and Kylo Ren fight them in The Last Jedi.
Yeah.
So two Jedis. And in this, so obviously Paz Vizsla dies in their hands, but Grogu and Din Djarin managed to somehow defeat them.
Which is like, I mean, look, it's a bit of a stretch because they're not only one Force user and one Mandalorian. The one thing they have going for them is that Din's Beskar armor probably is something that the Jedis didn't have. And obviously, two Jedis versus... They're not the exact same Praetorian Guard. And if they were, they'd be old as hell. It's probably passed down or passed up. Who knows? That could just be... Last Jedi ones could have just not faced battle in a long time.
Mm.
They're just inexperienced because they're just, you know, safe under the leadership of Snoke. These guys are still pretty strong. And it takes a lot to kill them. But... Yeah, if anyone was going to kill him, it'd have to be someone who's versatile in weapons handling. I don't remember. He didn't have the Darksaber with him, did he? No.
No, because at that stage, he's already given it to Bo-Katan.
Yep.
Which is another thing people have brought up is that feels a bit anticlimactic, the way he just gives it to her. Because the actual incident that happened was earlier, like where she earned it back.
Yeah. Well, in this one, there's actually a little bit more... It's a bit like Harry Potter and the Elder Wand kind of thing, where it's like he gives it to her, but he actually tells people, well...
That's exactly how it was, actually. That's what I felt in terms of when Harry Earns it from Malfoy because he just snatches the wand out of his hands.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's like, well, who beat who? It's like Din actually got defeated in battle when he had the Darksaber by this weird hunter, and Bo-Katan defeated the hunter. So technically, if...
And she picked up the...
She picked up the Darksaber, so it's like, well, if the Darksaber had a... If the wand chooses the wizard, if the Darksaber chooses the Mandalorian, she definitely earned it in that moment.
Yeah.
And so Din just is reminding everyone, like, look, I lost. Bo took it and defeated it.
Yeah.
And then immediately all the Mandalorians that are watching them are like, oh, okay, fair enough.
Yeah, that's fair enough.
That's fair enough. We believe you.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, maybe that confidence in that like ability is different to just handing it over.
Yeah.
No one would have respected her if Din's like, I don't care, take it.
Just take it.
But Din's like, no, I died. I almost died. She saved me. She took it. So this is rightfully hers by creed. And that's when everyone's like, oh shit. Okay.
Makes sense.
Maybe it is. And then the way she uses the Darksaber from then on is very, very like only when it matters. And she uses it really, really well in the last endgame. That last fight scene when all the Mandalorians like flying and charging against the Imperial Super Commandos who are, you know, Moff Gideon is alive and he's been basically.
So that comes up.
Raising an army of like Beskar armored Imperial Stormtroopers, which is a reference to, that happens in Rebels.
Yeah.
They're called Super Commandos and they basically fight with Death Watch against the other Mandalorians. But yeah, he brings them back and there's this epic scene.
And he's also cloning himself.
Yeah, he's cloning himself, which they really glossed over that.
Yeah, and the whole thing around that was just not well, it's just not well delivered in terms of the show because this is in the finale.
Right.
So he's looking at a map and he can see Din Djarin on the map,
like
where he's walking, and he knows where his clones are.
Yeah.
He knows they're walking towards that.
Yeah.
So, and he's got time to actually go and confront them, but he doesn't.
Yeah, and he just kind of sees what happens.
Yeah, he's just watching them, and obviously they're going to destroy them. Like, they're not just going to walk past them.
Yeah.
So he just lets that happen, and then afterwards he's like, oh, you've destroyed – he's angry about it. I'm like, you had time to
– Yeah. Well, you see these vats of Giancarlo Esposito. You see vats of him, right? And then Din just destroys him knowing this can't be good. Like, we kind of see it build up. There's mysterious hints to cloning that people are talking about, and it kind of builds up and builds up throughout the season. And then it's not really addressed in a proper way. I really felt they took a moment to have Moff Gideon have this. They should have given him a monologue where he's like, "I'm gonna transcend death," like have like a Voldemort moment where it's just like, "I'm creating clones that are force sensitive."
Yeah,
but you don't hear about it until Din destroys him, and he's like, "What did you do?"
That's right.
I was building force sensitive clones to replace me and combine the best of the Jedi with this. And it's like, you kind of see it in a way where it's like, he speaks of it mournfully, whereas you need to kind of spend some time to show what he's actually doing. Because until that point, it's not really revealed what he's trying to do.
Yeah, that's right.
So it's like, well, okay, cool, that happened. And, you know, he fights Din Djarin and Bo at the same time. That's a cool battle scene. They all fight together. Darksaber versus Moff Gideon's electro staff and that kind of stuff versus just Din with his weapons and Grogu as well. So Grogu
ends up saving the day, well, at least saving Bo-Katan and Din Djarin.
And in his We Are Groot moment,
yes.
He just does the force shift.
Yeah.
Some Rebels fans are like, this is what Kanan Jarrus should have done. And I'm like, okay, that cuts deep for anyone who's watched Rebels. Please don't insult Kanan. He did his best. Right. He dies. Tried to do the exact same thing Grogu did, but he couldn't like stop the explosion. So he dies from it. But he saves his family and he pushes out Ezra and stuff. But yeah, no, that was a noble cause. And again, you don't really see Moff Gideon die. You kind of see him engulfed in the explosion and then the cliffside just gets completely collapsed.
Yeah,
like, dude, he's wearing Beskar armor. I'm like, if you don't make it clear, he's
probably going to come back. I mean,
yeah.
The Emperor came back, so really.
Oh my God. Somehow, Moff Gideon returned. I swear to God, that's the worst writing in the history of Star Wars. Actually, no, the worst writing in the history of Star Wars is we can't defeat him with hate. You have to save what you love. Last Jedi is full of zingers.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, it was an interesting season. It had its ups and downs and people coming together. some awesome scenes, like when the Mandalorians first come into Navarra and you see the like Imperial cruiser with like the Mandalorian design of the Mythosaur on the bottom.
Yeah.
I'm like, that was epic. That's awesome. I love that. It felt like
that was the second last episode?
Second last episode. It felt like a Denis Villeneuve, like a Denis Villeneuve shot of Dune almost.
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it was. The second last episode is probably the best episode in the season.
Oh, yeah. Everyone coming together and just planning the attack.
Yeah.
There's a lot of battle, a lot of, hopes that were like, okay, they're going to fight for Mandalore. They're going to take it. They do. The end episode where everything's kind of nice and resolved was great to see, that them taking back Mandalore, reigniting the furnace. The armorer is not evil. This is not planning some weird thing. There's so much like speculation about, oh, but she's been working with Moff Gideon. Like, why? Why would she betray her own people?
Yeah.
Yeah, no. There was no twist per se.
Yeah.
Which I think is, everyone was expecting a real crazy cameo or a real crazy twist or something to happen. Yeah. And like,
Luke Skywalker doesn't turn up again.
I wouldn't have liked that. Like, if he turns up every time something's wrong, it's like, well, you can never make a show.
Yeah.
He's just going to come and save the day.
Yeah.
This was just Mandalorians fighting for their own peace. You know, Paz Vizsla died. That's enough. So like the end of it was done, I think, quite well. They wrapped up everything. They gave Bo-Katan her resolution. She's now leader of the Mandalorians. She earned it, and I think she did earn it. It's well earned, and she was given that. The armor is back on Mandalore in Sundari with the massive forge. They've reclaimed Mandalore, which is huge. This is something that's been happening back and forth for like last 60 years, I think, since Clone Wars, since Rebels. They changed hands, and now it's back. And Din is back on Navarro with Grogu, and they have their own little, you know, home on the range, which is really, really nice.
Yeah.
IG-11 is fully back, and now he's the marshal of Navarro with his new programming.
Yeah.
Which is cool. I think everything has a nice little resolution to it. And they almost ended it as if this is the end of the Mandalorian show altogether.
Yeah. So,
which is really weird. It was like, wow.
It felt like it wasn't just a season finale, but a series finale. Yep. And they haven't announced any more Mandalorian seasons.
No, they haven't.
So,
which is purposeful. This could be it.
Yeah.
Which could be it. Yeah. And like, if it was the end, I would not be sad because everything kind of resolved. They rushed that finale though. There was so much that happened in that finale.
Yeah.
You could feel it was rushed. If they didn't split it into two, I feel like they should have maybe put a little bit less in it. It was just, there was so much in that finale, you kind of felt there was the whole Moff Gideon clone, Force clone storyline, the counterattack of the Mandalorians coming from orbit back into the thing, the massive, Praetorian Guard fight was in that, and the Moff Gideon fight was in that. It was so much.
Yeah.
I think they could have pasted a little bit.
They could have split it out across a couple of episodes. Yeah, because there's definitely filler episodes, which they could have, you know, just removed.
Yeah.
So the one with Jack Black probably.
Yeah, it was great. It was great seeing you know, Jack Black and Lizzo, you know, in a universe that maybe we never would have imagined them seeing them.
But I wonder if he made a song on this one.
Oh, he makes a song for everything he's in. He would definitely would have made a song about this. Yeah. I would love to hear about Matt Lauren, Jack Black. It's you know, it's interesting. It's a series that felt to me like, you know how Falcon and the Winter Soldier, how it had to be completely rewritten because of COVID.
Yeah.
And the whole premise of the storyline was vaccines.
Yeah.
And you could tell it was massive swathes of story were swapped out. If not last minute, close to production, where certain things kind of felt like they didn't connect as well. Something else happened in the back that they had designed or intuited, and it didn't really feel like that was their intent.
Yeah.
This is what season 3 felt like. It felt like there were so many things that they had planned or done in the background that had been kind of rewired or rewritten towards the latter half of the season.
Yeah, I think it had to end in a certain way, maybe because of the movie that's coming up.
Right,
so
yes.
So things had to be, at least from the Mandalorian perspective, they had to be in a certain state before the start of that movie, I'm guessing, and they had to write with that in mind, and maybe rewrite with that in mind. So in terms of other stuff that's coming up, so we've got the movie that's a culmination of all of these shows. So we've got Ahsoka coming up later this year.
Yeah, Ahsoka's going to be huge. like that, yeah, Mandalorian is to Clone Wars as is Ahsoka is to Rebels.
Yeah.
I think. There's going to be a continuation of many different storylines. And we even saw some cameos of Rebels characters in Mandalorian Season 3.
Yeah.
So we saw Zeb, Ara Zeb, who is one of the chief characters of Rebels. And to see him in full CG mocap, voiced by the same guy who voiced him in Rebels, Jeff Bloom, it was like, wow, that's uncannily good. It looks so good. And yeah, I can't wait to see them in Ahsoka. There's a lot of details that came out in Star Wars Celebration. So Ahsoka trailer dropped. The announcement of Dave Filoni doing not just the Mandalorian film, but there's going to be other people doing other films around that same time period.
Yeah.
So, and it was revealed that the voice actor for Thrawn, who that was going to be, the same one from Rebels, Lars Mikkelsen.
Yeah.
Is going to be doing it. So we got Thrawn name dropped. We got Ahsoka. I feel like we're going to see a lot more. Oh, Thrawn was also dropped in season 3. By Moff Gideon. So there's a cool scene, we're just going back to that, where he's talking via holo conference to all these other different Imperial survivors and leaders and, you know, commanders who survived. They're planning something and they just mentioned his name. Like, what about Thrawn? We've got to wait for Thrawn. And Moff is like, I haven't seen Thrawn. I don't know where he is. Where is he? He's not around. Everyone's talking about him, but I don't know where he is.
Mm.
And the last thing you see of Thrawn is he just zips off into hyperspace because Ezra pulls the thing with the Purgles. So we don't know where he is. And so Moff's like, look, if he's not here, he's not here. He's absent. And that's the way we leave that whole thing, where I think Thrawn is going to make a massive entrance and he's going to be like the force to be reckoned with. They might even do, like, I've been listening to the Thrawn audiobooks, and I'll be honest, there's enough material in there, like his history, to do a film or a series just
on Thrawn. Yeah.
There's so much depth of character. Like the military tactician side, the story side of what, where his allegiances lie. I reckon they could do it. And I think this is the one character that is not being built up just to be dominated by a hero or to be defeated by a hero. I feel like this is one character that could sustain, possibly even be the cause of the new order, right?
Yeah.
Which I reckon, if they don't take advantage of Thrawn, if they don't milk it for all it's worth, they'd be making a massive mistake.
Yeah.
Timothy Zahn is going to be involved, I reckon, in one of these endeavors. So who knows? I feel like in the Dave Filoni film, we're going to see a lot of characters come back, be called. I think Boba Fett's going to come back, obviously.
I think Boba Fett, coming back to Boba Fett, actually, apparently he was supposedly meant to be in season 3.
I was thinking, yeah, he's got to be, right? Like, he's a Mandalorian now.
Yeah, I think they told Tamara Morrison that, or they might have mentioned it when they were filming Boba Fett,
yeah,
that he's likely to be in season 3, but he never got a call, so.
Yeah, that's a wasted opportunity. Yeah. Like, I would have loved to have seen him with, you know, his gunship just come blazing, all guns blazing in, into Mandalore.
Yeah.
And be like, it's good to be home, boys. Like, like something like that would have been crazy good.
Yeah.
Because, that would have been the thing that would have sealed off season 3. Like, saying, oh, nice. Boba Fett's in this. He goes revenge because, you know, Din took out most of the Book of Boba Fett. And he's returning a service because without Din, you know, Boba couldn't have taken Mos Espa.
Yeah, that's right.
So, like, just a simple kind of reference would have been great. I think
He'll be in the movie, for sure.
And the movie is going to be, this is Dave Filoni's first movie. So there's going to be a lot of hype. Given
he's got a lot of experience in terms of shows over decades, right?
Massive.
But, will be his first feature film.
As a storyboarder, like, he started off storyboarding right now to doing, like, live action. And, like, if you go back and watch season 2 of Mandalorian and watch the Ahsoka episode where she's the main character in it. Like, if the movie's anything like that, it's going to be epic because Dave Filoni is a massive fan of, like, Akira Kurosawa, which is what inspired George Lucas to make the character of Obi-Wan Kenobi and that kind of stuff. Like, the old samurai films, the old westerns. If Dave Filoni channels that kind of energy, it's going to be amazing.
Yeah.
Because that's the kind of stuff that everyone is, like, just, like, frothing at the mouth to see more of, the core Filoni stuff. And I think right now in terms of Star Wars property, apart from Tony Gilroy and Andor and what's really working, like, there has never been as much support for Star Wars as there has been under Dave Filoni. Like, people are, like, rallying behind him because he's credited with bringing some of the most beloved resurrections of the Star Wars fandom, like the Clone Wars, obviously, the Rebels. You know, with the Mandalorian, with Jon Favreau, has been like a love letter towards everything that maybe the sequels kind of neglected.
Yeah. And it managed to bring in an audience that is traditionally not Star Wars as well. So yeah, a wider...
massive achievement.
A wider audience, yeah. So I think a lot of people are definitely looking forward to that movie. I think it's still 3 or 4 years away.
Yeah, I think Ahsoka will be the first foray into building that. Because like, there's a big difference between making a series, which I think is much more intensive than a movie, because you got, instead of just 2 hours on screen, you have like 10, 15 hours to develop characters, storylines. It's much more intensive. You get more time to work with the script. A movie has to be something that you can do in 2 or 3 hours time. It's got to be really condensed, and you got to make it feel like it's not rushing.
Yeah.
Which is a massive challenge.
Yeah.
You know, like think about the last episode of season 3. That felt rushed. It was an hour and 15 or 20 minutes long. Right. Now imagine making a movie that has more things that happen in it without feeling rushed. That's a real challenge.
Yeah.
Right? I was just watching Denis Villeneuve's Dune the other day, because I can't get enough of Dune. And there's so much shit that happens in that 2 hour and 30 minutes. None of it feels rushed.
Yeah.
And the way they do that is that you pace it out. You use different filming techniques to make it seem like the passage of time is happening without it actually passing. So it's an art form. It's a really, really interesting.
Yeah, it's definitely different to a series. So that's a skill that has he done. There's a Clone Wars movie, right?
Which is not. It's not highly regarded or critically acclaimed.
Yeah,
and it's an animated movie.
Yeah, yeah.
So, and I'm pretty sure Dave did work on that.
Yeah,
it wasn't amazing. It was just a story thing to kind of start off the TV series, to be honest. So yeah, he hasn't had some real, he's never done a live action film. He shadowed Rian Johnson in Last Jedi to get like that live filming experience before he did his own stuff with Mandalorian, obviously. So I think there's no one more qualified to do it right now as a storyboard maker. And obviously Dave is not going to do it by himself. He's not going to jump in this alone. He has people he trusts. He has directors that he works with, and he has cinematographers he trusts. So I think there's going to be a lot of good talent behind this, and I'm really looking forward to it. I'm not even sure what I'm expecting right now.
Yeah.
Because I don't know what I want in terms of the Star Wars. Star Wars is in a weird phase right now where it's like there's several different timelines happening.
Yeah.
Right? There's pre-Empire with Andor. There's post-Empire with Mandalorian. There's pre-sequel with some of the shows that are coming in right before the sequel trilogy.
There's post-sequel stuff now with the new Rey movie. So.
Yeah, that's a mind trip. Yeah. Post-sequel with new Rey leading a new academy. And then there is the sweet old Clone Wars era.
Yeah.
Between Revenge of the Sith. After Revenge of the Sith, before A New Hope. So Obi-Wan, the Jedi Survivor series, video games, all that kind of stuff. And then High Republic, obviously.
Yeah.
So like 7 different timelines. And this is what they highlighted in Star Wars Celebration. There's 6 different like timelines where they can build more story and write and explore.
Yeah.
And then there's the young Jedi, the kindergartens, the show.
Oh, okay,
which is, I don't think it's
canon. Is that the one with Jude Law? There's a show with Jude Law.
Yeah, no, that's not going to be I'm talking about the, it's like the Coco Melon equivalent of Star Wars. Okay. It's like the young
Star Wars Junior.
Star Wars Junior. Yeah.
Yeah, okay. There is a show with Jude Law where he's with teenagers or something. I don't know.
Yeah, that might be Acolyte. Is it Acolyte?
Potentially. Yeah, it could be. And then there's also the James Mangold film, feature film, which is apparently about the first ever Jedi.
This will
be like pre everything. So
pre everything. Yeah, it's really interesting. I think it's cool to be in a place where you don't, like, I don't know what I want. Which could also lead to a lot of disappointment. People could be like, "Oh, we didn't want this." Don't.
Which is
this
generally the case with someone's always disappointed when it comes to Star Wars.
Oh, obviously,
it's hard to
have. I think Celebration was a great. I don't know if anyone else watched Star Wars Celebration, but it was a great, great show of the love the fandom has for certain people who've maybe had it rough. Like Hayden Christensen, every time he comes out for like Celebration. Last time was Anaheim. This time was in London. He got a such a massive, like, standing ovation and just fan response that, you know, it's great to see that. And also, I don't even know if we mentioned this, but Ahmed Best. Ahmed Best, the guy who did the voice of Jar Jar, he got a massively cool cameo in Star Wars, in Mandalorian. Was it season 3 Mandalorian? Where he saves Grogu, right? He's a Jedi that saves Grogu from the escape from this flashback.
Oh, yeah, in the flashback. Oh, that's him.
So, it's answered. How did Grogu escape the Jedi Temple during Order 66? Well, Ahmed Best came up in Jedi robes with dual lightsabers and fucking saved him, which was an amazing scene.
Yeah.
So Ahmed Best also is getting a lot of love. A lot of people getting a lot of love at Star Wars Celebration. If you haven't already, please go and watch like the panels they had for like Andor. Because Andor is now, people are like, there were people who came to Star Wars Celebration dressed up as the prisoners and stood at the bus stops barefoot to catch a bus to go to the celebration thing without shoes just to honor the show. That's and I think when the showmakers were on the panel, they realized that, like, oh my God, these fans are crazy. Like, yeah, you have the best fans and you have also the most toxic kind of people in the backgrounds. But
yeah,
I like to think Star Wars has the best fans because we can be passionate to a point of toxicity. But when it comes to when it really counts and we have like Obi-Wan, the cast and crew of Obi-Wan came back for like the 1 year anniversary to show how the impact it. And the little 10-year-old girl who played Leia.
Oh my God.
She's such an amazing like presence on stage. And she got a lot of love from the characters and the audience. Everyone loves her like talking about how she approached the films and how she watched the original movies to prepare for the role. She's 10 years old.
Yeah.
She shouldn't even be like talking on stage. Like I'm pretty sure I wasn't nearly as verbal being her age. But she was such a cool, collected, you know, appreciative of the series and the fans and that kind of stuff. It was really cool to see Celebration drop all his bombs and those revelations.
Well, a lot of people are waiting for movie announcements because there hasn't been any movies that have come out since Rise of Skywalker, which was
understandably so
4 years ago now.
I think the Star Wars movie experience has been a little bit traumatic for some.
Yeah.
Unexpected for both and disappointing for others. A few people love it, but as a movie goer, the Star Wars is now crossed over to. I'm in love with the series now, the TV shows.
Yeah,
we have time to develop the characters, and the movies have kind of made me realize that okay, I need to take this a little bit less seriously because some movies I watch, I'm just like, I can't believe they destroyed everything I loved. That's the feeling I got watching Last Jedi, and I was just like, nothing's gonna redeem this for me. And I go watch it again and I'm like, you know what? It's a movie. I shouldn't take it that seriously. that's when I started realizing you're too much of a fan when you get that disappointed and you just take things easily afterwards. And I'm like, I've never felt as emotionally invested in anything else. So I'm like, oh, that's great. I can actually come back to reality now and appreciate things when they're done well. And so you see people watching the finale of season 2 of Mandalorian or watching the Book of Boba Fett, Luke comes back and people are crying because they don't know how to express this gratitude. I want to see more of that unexpected surprise or of like, you know, show me something from, you know, the Timothy Zahn universe or the old legacy Star Wars that, you know, people weren't expecting. Throw that stuff in there, people are going to love it.
Yeah.
That's what the movies are going to be now, like little entries.
And it's good that they're moving away from like the trilogy structure and they're just doing separate stories.
Yeah.
And I think they were going to do that, but unfortunately, like Solo didn't perform that well because I think they had more sort of single movies planned.
They did. I still feel Solo, if Solo didn't exist, you wouldn't miss any of it.
Because
the whole story of Solo is told between the lines in the original Star Wars, right? You see Han was an ex-Imperial or what is the Kessel Run? You know, where did Lando and Han had some bad.
And it was good to have that like mystery around his past as well.
Yeah.
I think seeing it kind of demystifies it. So it's not as cool anymore.
Yeah. And it was happening in this phase of Hollywood where they felt this need to go back and show exactly what happened the moment before our beloved movie began, like Rogue One doing the moment, like the literal minutes before the beginning of Star Wars A New Hope.
Yeah.
Or like The Hobbit ending right where Lord of the Rings started.
With
Elijah Wood and stuff. Like, you don't need to do that. I don't know why they feel like they have to do it.
Yeah.
You know? And that was around the same time that Salt Lake came out. It's a good film. I just feel like if it didn't exist, would you really miss it?
Yeah, although they did set up some stuff in that movie with Darth Maul.
Oh, Darth Maul. Yeah, Ray Park resuming Darth Maul. And I'm like, that's some pretty heavy stuff. And technically, he is alive during that time. So, yeah, it's interesting to see where that
I don't think they're ever going to revisit that by the looks of it. But because Emilia Clarke's character was obviously scheming something with Darth Maul.
With the criminal syndicate that was setting up. And I'm like, I mean, they could still do it. It would just be really forced.
Yeah.
Right. And it's set before the events of A New Hope, which is not where the Filoni universe is going, which is post Return of the Jedi.
Yeah.
So you've got to be asking yourself, well, is it really worth? Maybe they just put it as a cameo. I don't think they had intended too much to go forward there. But yeah, it must be really weird as an actor now. If you're going into Star Wars, which time era are you going to be placed in? You know, because there's some time eras that are just doomed to fail. Like if you're put in the time era before A New Hope, you know it's going to be limited. Like maybe Obi-Wan season 2, they could have, I don't know, the guy who plays Cal Kestis, Dominic Monaghan. What was his name? I forgot his name. Yeah, he could have a TV series where he plays Jedi Survivor or the sequel to Jedi Survivor as a TV show. But if I was an actor, I would want to be cast in roles that have open-ended storylines, like maybe post-Mandalorian.
Mm.
Post-Mandalorian, pre-sequel. Post-sequel even could be interesting. Post-sequel. I don't know.
Post-sequel, you don't know what's going to happen, right? There's nothing. We don't know. So that is as open-ended as
the only hint I got was Rey has the books that she got from Luke's Hamlet. So she's going to use those books to start the new Jedi Order.
Yeah.
So that'll be really interesting to see what happens. I've seen some rumors that she's pregnant in some leaked screenshots.
So, yeah, you told me this.
I called it.
You told me this theory.
I called it the moment I saw fucking Kylo put his hand over Rey's stomach to revive her. I'm like, he's going to like induce life in her womb or some shit. Like, she's going to, like, if they make that happen, it'd be the corniest shit ever. But I'm like, please don't do that. Just make her like Rey the Jedi Knight. Like, I have reservations of Rey as it is, but if she just make her, okay, if she teaches, I'll be happy. You know?
Yeah. If she does what Luke couldn't do in the end.
Yeah.
People are not happy about that, by the way, because Luke Skywalker fans, they're obviously...
I'm right there. Yeah. I'm absolutely furious that they made him like, this old disgruntled guy. I'm like,
And that they do not want to see Rey do it instead of Luke, because they're like, what does Rey have that Luke doesn't have?
I can see that, but I'm now starting to kind of counter those toxic fans that are like, listen, if she's the last remaining Jedi, who else would you have doing? One of Luke's ghosts flipping pages? There's no one else.
Yeah.
So it's like, okay, you made a Jedi. You made three films around this Jedi, right? Let's give her the love that she deserves. I do think Daisy Ridley needs to have a bit of like love. She was introduced. She was brought back on the panel to announce the movie, and she got a like an applause. But I feel like there's a reason why they're not bringing her back into the proper like mosh pit of Star Wars fans yet, because there's still a bit of a divide.
It's too early. Yeah.
Let's learn a lesson from how Hayden Christensen was treated, right? The fact that they love him now. Let's skip all that time and just give Daisy Ridley some affection, right? She got a crazy hard role. People are, so I don't know if you know this, but actors are actually kind of apprehensive of taking these roles. Because once they're cast, it's like they can't do anything else. That you've gotten the role of a lifetime. You don't need the smaller movie roles anymore, so they're not cast.
Yeah.
So it's like really hard for them to be tasked as anything else. So this was a sacrifice as much as it is an opportunity. Yeah, they get a lot of movie, they get a lot of things. They get a lot of hate as well, dude. Like the amount of shit they get, I can't imagine what it does to people's psyche.
Yeah, like the, what was her name? Kelly Marie Tran, who played.
Oh, Kelly Marie Tran.
Yeah.
What was done to her was, look, it was the screenwriter's fault. Most of it was the screenwriter's fault. She's a great actress, not a fault. The line she was given and the act she had to do was just bad. And the fans.
And the fact that she was basically just written out of Rise of Skywalker because she was busy with something else. So she just.
Yeah. Well, you know what? I think that the showrunners and screenwriters have a lot to answer for. And she wasn't given a correct opportunity. I honestly wouldn't mind seeing her in a TV show post, you know, Rise of Skywalker, just to show what she's up to and how she's kind of interacting with the new world. I don't know if the actress would be up for that. She might not want to resume that.
There's a lot of actors from that sequel trilogy that have openly said that they're not coming back to Star Wars. Oscar Isaac,
he doesn't want anything to do with it.
John Boyega.
Oh my God, John Boyega is like so, I love how vocal he is about how shit the sequels were.
Yeah.
And he's like, oh, you're going to make the guy who like almost tried to kill Rey fall in love with him and have them together? Isn't that a bit, that's a bit, you know, it's a bit abusive, you think? Like, you know, and I'm totally for him. I love everything John Boyega is doing now, just going out and saying like shit against you. He's like, and he's right, you know, because they included him for the excitement of everyone else, thinking, oh, it could be a Jedi.
Yeah, because in the first trailer for Force Awakens, you see him with a lightsaber, or you see his hand with a lightsaber.
Oh, and to be honest, I never thought he was going to be a Jedi. I thought they're setting him up for someone else to become the Jedi.
Yeah.
But I thought at least they'd make him a leader of the rebellion or against the stormtroopers who are, like, you know, rising up against the...
Yeah, because he had such an interesting backstory because he was a...
Such a backstory. They did nothing with him. Like, the Last Jedi basically made him a comic relief, right?
Yeah.
And...
Not even that. He was just yelling at Rey the whole time.
So. Well, that and his entire... All of the arcs... Okay, I have to stop myself every time I talk about Last Jedi because I could go into like I have a vein that comes up here and I'll go into like a 92-minute rant.
And now that we're on video, you get to see the vein.
You get to see the vein in high def. Like I could deconstruct Last Jedi to show how like it's all about the stupid upending expectations. But his storyline was purposefully made so that you're following this progressive story where he thinks he knows how he's going to save it and it leads to nowhere. And that's the point of the movie, whereas everything leads to nowhere, right? And the Rise of Skywalker basically just takes it to another level, where it's just like, well.
And in that movie, there's always something he wants to tell Rey. He's like, I need to tell you something, but he never ends up telling her.
Yeah, yeah. You can tell they didn't really think about it.
Yeah.
And when you hear about the canned version of what was meant to be the Colin Trevorrow Duel of the Fates script.
Yeah.
It was so much better. Like the way they took Rey's direction of being this renegade Jedi, just seeks out and destroys what she thinks to destroy. Finn is not even worried about simping for Rey. He's just focused on collecting all of the stormtroopers who want to rise up against the New Order. What is the New Order called again? I keep missing it. I keep mispronouncing it. Not the Fallen Order.
Last Order, Final Order. I'm trying to remember.
Yeah, it's like the last. There's another name for the Red Ones.
Yeah,
like the Final Order or something like that.
Yeah.
So he creates this uprising, and the screenplay for it is incredible. Like the way that they showed what was happening with the storyboarding of him in like AT-ATs leading an army of like ex stormtroopers against the New Order. It's like, well, I would have preferred that. I would have like way preferred that. I'll be honest. I don't even remember what happens in Rise of Skywalker. I've almost deleted it from my mind. I actually don't remember what happens. Like Lando comes with a bunch of ships and saves them on Senegal? Exegol.
Exegol.
Senegal is the capital
city. Exegon or something?
Exegol.
Yeah.
It's so forgettable, the story. I'm just like, I don't even remember what happens. I don't think I've seen it since I watched it in the theaters.
Yeah, I think I'll watch it once after that. But I haven't seen it many times either, and I won't be watching it many times.
Maybe it's not for us. Maybe the Disney films weren't for us. You know what I mean? Like, maybe
Star Wars is always meant to be for kids. Like George Lucas has always said, it's meant to be for kids.
For kids.
Maybe we're not kids now. So
we're not kids.
Maybe
The Mandalorian, I know, was for me. Mandalorian is for like the 30s and the 40-year-old dudes. Dude, it has all my favorite actors. The moment they showed a Mandalorian show with Bill Burr making a cameo, I'm like, all right, you guys made this for me. That's for me. I'm watching that show. So fair enough. I'm like, I know what's for me and I'm excited for what's around the corner, but I've no idea what to expect.
Yeah.
So I'm like, I'm just keeping my mind open. I'm not watching trailers anymore because I'm just like, they're going to build up expectations with that. I'm just not going to watch it. We'll see how we go. I'm genuinely going to be like open-minded about what's coming because it's a brave new world. And look, season 3, not as good as season 2 for Mandalorian, but I think season 3 didn't try and set up too many things, they stopped it where it was.
Yeah, so I think from a non-Star Wars person, I mean, I've watched all the Star Wars movies, but I'm certainly not a big fan like you. I think season two and season one were certainly a step above season three. I think this is a step below. And as a neutral person watching this show and watching Star Wars, I'd like them to get a bit more accessible. I think they're starting to get a bit more niche in terms of like they're really targeting certain audiences. And Mandalorian sort of opened it up, but then I don't know what's happened, but it started to become narrow again.
Yeah.
In terms of the way they're telling stories. So like when Force Awakens came out, that attracted a brand new audience to Star Wars.
Mm, yeah.
Throughout the sequel trilogy, they slowly lost them. And I think Mandalorian's brought them back on, but then they're starting to lose them again.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping that...
you're right. The wonder is kind of lost.
That's right, yeah. And there's so many other... I think when the first Star Wars came out, it was one of a kind at that time. That's why it was such a phenomenon, and that's why it's still got such a big fan base. Now we've just got so much pop culture. There's so many.
It's so much.
There's so many different things that you can get into, and so much deep mythology. Like in the Marvel universe, there's it's a wide universe, and there's so many different things in that universe. I feel like Star Wars is losing its audience because it's just not capturing what people want. At this stage. So I hope those new films, they do something different and they get the audience back on board. And Ahsoka's looking pretty good, but I think, again, that's just going to attract the core Star Wars
fan base. There is a lot of, pulling in the Rebels fans, pulling in the Ahsoka fans, the Clone Wars fans, and it's going to be a merger of a lot of things. And I'm going to make a call here. I think the secret ingredient to bringing in all, to bring back that new wonder is going to be a good villain.
Yeah, right? I think that's what the sequel trilogy suffered from as well, because Snoke was a menacing villain in the first movie.
Well, even before Snoke, Kylo Ren, when I first saw the teaser trailer for Force Awakens, I was enamored with what you are describing, this wonder of like, who are these characters? When I saw Kylo as the next Darth Vader or something, like weird, the voice modulator and shit, and you see Darth Vader's burnt things, so I was like, oh, he actually knows this thing existed, but he wants to be his own villain. Who is this kid? Who is this character? I was really, really fascinated. That wonder of who is this new villain created this kind of need for me to see who are the heroes that are going to fight against this force.
Yeah.
So I think if they have a really good villain, and that villain, I'm 99% sure it's going to be Thrawn.
Yeah.
A lot of people, like casual fans, might not know who this is. They know the name has been dropped, right? And even me, I wasn't the one to go and read the novels back when the original Star Wars were made. That's where Thrawn was introduced by Timothy Zahn. I didn't read those stuff. I'm relatively new in reading up, the audiobooks and the Thrawn legacy and that kind of stuff. So he's going to be new to a lot of people. And he's visually very like, okay, what is this? I think he's the secret ingredient. If they do it well, if they bring about, he's the one character where he's bested, the Rebels many times tactically.
Yeah.
And he's basically like in Rebels, you watch Rebels season four, go and watch some of those episodes. You just see the protagonists get their like asses wiped, completely handed to them by military tacticians that are headed by Thrawn. And he's just like saying, well, you walked right into our trap. And you're thinking, wow, well, what does it take to defeat someone like this? That would be an interesting way to go about it.
Yeah.
Or you could introduce a completely new story, wipe the slate clean and like Acolyte or this new first Jedi, like very, very first Jedi stuff.
Yeah.
I think there's a story for everyone, but there still needs to be something everyone can rally around.
Yeah. And the other problem with Star Wars is there's a lot of similarities between all three trilogies in terms of the protagonist is a certain type of character.
Yeah.
They're special. They're the one.
Yeah. Oh, the maybe chosen
if,
one.
Yeah, yeah. Maybe if we move away from that sort of prophecy type storytelling and just do something different. Like,
I think with the Skywalker saga ending, that's done.
Yeah.
They're not doing that mistake again. I think we're starting to see that now with the shows that prioritize the group and the the family. You know, Star Wars is about family, obviously. Yeah. But when you start to make family about the people who are not just your own blood, but people who you choose to be. So Boba Fett was about that, right? Book of Boba Fett. Mandalorian was about that, essentially. Bringing back the Mandalorians together to be the one family unit. And I think when you have that kind of group-oriented thing, you kind of subvert the whole individual must save everything, like the chosen one or the leader or the one who was prophesied to have taken the kind of thing. Yeah, you're moving away from that kind of storytelling, which we're seeing a bit more of. I'll tell you personally what I miss the most is Clone Wars. Just that you had an army, you had a structure, you had the Republic versus the Separatists or the weird baddies, right? They were just there. And you had this constant dynamic of soldiers trying to follow orders and be moral in a time where there's warfare, or have like really, really dark battles where it's just like the Umbara arc in Clone Wars, where it's just day after day of grueling trench warfare, inhospitable, inhumane situations. That was really cool to watch because it's like I'm watching like a war documentary, but in space. So it's like, it's really weird. I'd love to be more of that gritty kind of side of, you know, where the human condition is tested. And we're seeing that with Andor. I think that's why people love Andor.
Yeah.
Is that you're getting back to that gritty sense of the Empire is actually looking competent. They're looking scary. So you're having these people trying to find a way to fight against them. Is actually exciting. You kind of see, you know how it ends. People know how the story ends, but they're still invested. Still,
yeah.
Which is really, really cool. If I were to put my money on which Star Wars franchise would get people most engaged, I wouldn't have put it on Andor.
Yeah.
Because it's like Rogue One follows it. We know how Rogue One ends. How are there any stakes?
Yeah.
And there's still stakes. I'm just like, damn.
And he was Andor. He was like the second lead in Rogue One. I mean, he wasn't in the main character.
Yeah, yeah. He was second lead. Yeah. It's interesting.
So
yeah. It's, again, good writing. Good writing can do wonders for a show. And I think they're finding where the writers are. They're testing the waters and they're seeing which writers got the right stuff. And they're pulling it back in. And it's going in a direction that I'm hopeful of, I think. The whole Star Wars genre. I think it's easy to blame Kathleen Kennedy when something we don't like happens, but we have to remember she was behind all of the decisions that worked as well. So Mandalorian working was giving Jon Favreau and Dave Filoni directive creative Bring control out,
yeah.
was, you know, was the executive decision, obviously. Andor was an executive decision. Like everything that has worked is also responsible. So let's keep a fair and balanced critique of what works versus what doesn't work.
Yeah.
And I think it's...
And people were very critical of George Lucas when he made the prequels.
Not forget.
Yeah.
People didn't love the prequels by any means. People literally... There's a Star Wars viewing order called Machete Order, where it's you watch episodes 4 and 5, and then you watch episodes 2 and 3, mm-hmm. and then you watch episode 6 before watching the sequels. They completely cut out one.
Okay.
It's called the Machete Order because it cuts out one. And I'm like, people hated George Lucas's prequels. And they're only loving it now because they're watching the sequels going, okay, I see what George was trying to do. I like these films now. And Clone Wars, people like wouldn't have liked the prequels if it wasn't for Clone Wars.
Yeah.
So I think the love is coming after the fact.
Yes.
He got so much shit for even the editing the originals. So,
And the overwhelming response when Disney bought the rights from George Lucas was positive because finally, we're going to get Star Wars without George Lucas. Maybe they're going to make some good Star Wars movies.
The whole sentiment was back then, like, let the fans make the films.
Yeah.
Because, George, you don't know what Star Wars is anymore. You've kind of your dialogue is horrendous. And I'll be honest, the dialogue was pretty bad.
Yeah.
for Attack of the Clones, some of he didn't know how to write romance. So all of that between Anakin and Padme felt so forced.
Episode 2 was a struggle. Yeah.
It was so forced. And to be honest, that's why to this day, I still love Phantom Menace. Because it has no romantic subplot. It's just full action. It has one of the best race sequences in like all of film.
It's got Darth Maul.
The end game.
It's got young Obi-Wan. It's got Qui-Gon Jinn. It's pretty good.
Duel of the Fates, the soundtrack. Bro, it's beautiful. The film is actually a masterpiece. And I think it's better than Attack of the Clones. Not as bad as Revenge of the Sith, obviously. But it's good. And it's much better than the sequels for me. Looking at how politics and stuff never really went away. So... Yeah, people are now wanting George Lucas to claim back the movies and do it again. And it's going to be a wave. It's going to be a wave. I would love to see George Lucas take it back.
I think he's very happily retired with the billions and billions of dollars that he got paid from.
He's definitely not going to be, he's not going to forget what it's like. But yeah, Star Wars is a very interesting place to be in right now. And if you're just joining, there's something for you. If you're a veteran, hop on the boat, you know, let us know where we went wrong or what we might not have criticized enough of.
Yes.
It's an interesting place to be. And I'm just waiting for the day where they have Star Wars Celebration Melbourne or Sydney or something.
Yeah.
I'll be there, man.
Well, they had it in London.
If they ever have it in Melbourne, in Australia, yeah, I'm going to cosplay. Who would you cosplay as if you could cosplay?
In Star Wars?
Yeah.
Let's see. I wouldn't go as a Jedi. So I wouldn't go as any of the Jedi.
Yeah, Jedi's a bit too easy.
I wouldn't go as a Jedi, but maybe who's a character that I like? I like Din Djarin.
Yeah. I would love to start
doing
if I had a full Beskar outfit.
Yeah.
I'd love that.
Din Djarin, probably.
Yep.
Yeah. Out of all the characters I could choose from,
Din Djarin, nice. Yeah. I would love to dress up.
Maybe not Han Solo. No, not really.
Han Solo, yeah. No. You could do a good Indian Han Solo. have Remy dress up as Chewbacca with a little belt.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
Or I could go as Din Djarin and Remy's Grogu.
And a little pouch.
Yeah.
Keep him in air gel. Yeah. I'd love to dress up as one of the clones. Like either Rex or Cody or just in clone. If I can get clone armor, or I'll probably Commando. I'd go as a Republic Commando. That'd be cool.
Yeah.
It'd be a good excuse just to wear the suit. Wear the thing around. And I've seen some people do some crazy cosplays.
Yeah.
But
actually my favorite character in Star Wars, and everyone dresses up as him, but Darth Vader.
Darth Vader.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nice.
But yeah, I probably wouldn't do that. It'd be too
cool. I mean, after Ahsoka comes out, I might consider doing Ezra.
Yeah.
He's technically, he's got that slightly ethnic look. So I'm like, maybe we could pass as Ezra. We'll see how that works. But yeah, that's if it's coming to Australia, which I doubt. Yeah. We'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Maybe if we get enough support on the podcast, we can fund a trip to wherever Star Wars Celebration
is. It's going to be in Japan, I think, next.
It's not far.
Asia Pacific. It's not far. It'll be interesting. And then we can get a lot of like Star Wars Visions cosplays happening as well.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. So that's cool. Yeah. So if you drop us a couple of bucks, we'll go to Star Wars Celebration Japan and bring you the firsthand news on what's happening there.
Yes. So yeah, I mean, if you want to support the podcast, all we really ask for is just reviews. So like review us on iTunes and Spotify.
Yes.
But since we're on, this will be on YouTube. So drop a comment, subscribe on YouTube.
Oh yeah, please comment. I love YouTube comments now.
Yes.
They're the best. They used to be cancer, but now they're good.
We'll see. Whenever we talk about anything like Star Wars, I think we'll get a lot of opinions. So definitely voice your opinions in the comment section.
Yeah, it should be good.
And you can contact us, obviously, comments. But if you want to send us an email, cognitiverecalibrationpodcast@gmail.com. We're on Twitter, CRecalibration, and Instagram and TikTok. So nice. Follow us on all of those. Thanks, Bhaskar, for coming on. This was fascinating discussion, actually. I thought it'd be great to talk about, not just confine ourselves to just Mandalorian Season 3, but just talk about Star Wars
in general. Yeah, Star Wars in general. No, it's always a pleasure. Thanks for having me on. And, looking forward to what the future brings.
Yes. So, yes.
Yeah. May the Force be with us both.
That's right.
May the Force be with you guys watching this. If you make it through all 1.5 hours, good on you.
So thanks everyone for listening or watching this episode. Next week we're going to be fastening our seatbelts.
Fastening.
Fast X. So those are always fun. Those movies.
Oh man,
not good, but they're always fun.
Five times. The trailer said family 5 times. Like, I counted it. I was in the theater watching it. I'm like, that's once. It's twice. Nothing gets in the way of my family. That's 5.
So, yeah, we'll look forward to that next week. Tarun will be back and, we'll see what that's like. It's always it's always an enjoyable time.
That'd be fun.
Talking about those movies. So, hope you're all staying safe. Hope you enjoyed this episode and we'll see you guys next week for Fast X.
Have a good one.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.